And we are recording. So, welcome everybody this week to the Supply Chain Group. Sig here at Hyperledger. Joshua Satin is acting as the host this week. I am actually doing the recording. I have Jay's key, Jay's host key. So I put that in. So I'm doing the recording this week and we'll post that later. I'll be taking minutes today also. And the high level agenda today is we're going to have Gokul Kandiraju from IBM, who's been leading their food trust initiative, do a walkthrough on food trust for us and just tell us how this is working at IBM and how we can.
Hello?
Your audio cut out.
So if nothing else, Gokul, I pass it right over to you. Please kick off.
Thank you, Josh. And for some time, I was not able to hear you, but I'm hoping all of you can hear me now.
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, great. So thanks for the opportunity. And yes, so we started IBM Food Trust project about 2.5-3 years ago. Initially, we started it with Walmart, and then now it's expanded to a lot more companies. And so I'm going to give an overview of the reasoning behind kicking this off, and I'll spend a little time on why we think this use case is great from particularly from a blockchain perspective. But more importantly, I'll get to a demo and I'll make sure we have some questions and so on. So before that, Josh, how much time do I have? I'm assuming it's like 20 to 25 minutes, right?
You have been allotted 30 minutes.
Oh, 30 minutes. Okay, great. So let me just get into this. First of all, if you look at today's food, and I'll spend a little time on introduction, but if you look at today's food, a lot of people get sick and die every year, right? So there's sort of foodborne illnesses. I mean, some of us must have heard of the romaine recall last year and a few years before spinach recall. It got affected end-to-end in a pretty bad way. People died, and then the retailers, they don't know, they cannot immediately react sometimes. So that's one aspect. And the second aspect is when such a thing happens, something like a surgical recall is not in place today. In other words, suppliers and the retailers in the end-to-end ecosystem are not aware what to keep and what got affected and what did not get affected. So they just throw away all the product from the shelf and from the distribution center. So as a result, a lot of food wastage also happens, right? By the way, I keep hearing noises, but it's okay. I'll continue. And then
whoever has their cell phone next to the phone, if you could move it away, it would be appreciated. Someone's phone keeps vibrating into the speaker.
Thank you, Josh. At the same time, there's a lot of inefficiency in the supply chain itself. A lot of paper-based processes are still in place. We also spoke to many suppliers and retailers and farmers and so on. So a lot of paper-based mechanisms. Digitization is a solution, particularly blockchain-based digital solution where you can trust is also great. If you look at some third world countries and if you look at other Asian countries, sometimes there's a lot of corruption as well. At a global scale, certificates which are paper-based are modified, dates are changed, and so on. So there's some fraud that gets into the system. So having a trusted data platform can really be a solution from that angle, right? And so here are some of the motivations why and problems we are trying to solve, right? Fraud, waste, and so on. And technically, if you take a look at it in terms of entities and the processes that are there, the data is very much siloed. Every partner in the supply chain system maintains their own, record of data in their own system. Some have ERP solutions, some have specific supply chain solutions, like famous Sage and so on. Some have databases, some have Excel spreadsheets, and some have paper. So different kinds of ways to store data and information. And there's no visibility to the partners, right? And we believe that providing such end-to-end visibility in a permissioned way to all the partners of the ecosystem can really help solve some important problems that today's food supply chain is facing. And that was the motivation behind creating IBM Food Trust, where end-to-end ecosystem, whether it be right from farmer to the vendor to the supplier to the retailer, all the way to the consumer, they can experience the benefits of shared data platform, right, in a permissioned way. And kind of going into this model where everybody is connected and yet you have control on what you put, right? So that was the motivation. And again, I'm not getting into all the benefits that a blockchain system offers, because I think this group probably is well versed with it. So I'll focus more on the IBM Food Trust solution itself. So if you look at the food supply chain, these are some of the benefits and value that can be got out of such a data sharing platform from each of the partners. So I'll just quickly walk through this. If you look at growers on the left, right? Or let me start with the retailers. Retailers are the ones who are actually facing the consumers. That is, you and me go to the Walmarts or the Aldi's or the, you know, Stop and Shops, and we buy all these goods, right? Or food. So first of all, there's a notion of, and particularly the recently, a lot of consumers have got onto this of understanding where the food is coming from. Some consumers may prefer locally grown foods. Some consumers may prefer only organic foods and so on. So how do you trust it? Establishing that brand is something retailers would like to do, right? And if you provide information from a trusted data platform, that's easy for them. And as a result, they can get consumer loyalty. And I talked about recalls, right? If you know, for example, what lot that was commissioned at a particular farmer, where all it got distributed in the supply chain, you could do a much surgical recall and save a lot of money and, you know, and even wastage of food. So those kinds of things are possible by end-to-end data sharing, right? And optimization of supply chain itself to extend shelf life products and so on. And if you look at logistic companies, typically logistic companies are responsible once they are transferring food, you know, once they pick up food from like a supplier and delivering it to retailer, in the intermediate time space, they're responsible to maintain the compliance and the temperature, for example, and humidity and all the conditions that are required for that kind of food to be processed, to be transferred. And you know, but what is the way to prove them? Sometimes today they collect sensor data and they show those reports, right? Whereas if you have a automated sensor-based data pushed to a trusted data platform like blockchain, then this information can be seen by retailers and suppliers and everybody's in real time. And so there is no need to really put extra effort to prove, right? And even from an auditing perspective, it likely helps the whole supply chain. So those are some of the benefits. And these are some of the initial benefits, and maybe a lot more analytics and so on can be done and in future using this whole data platform. Similarly, wholesalers can benefit. And if you look at manufacturers particularly, then they are the ones who get audited by, you know, federal agencies and so on. So by having important data on the blockchain-based platform, it can really help prove that nothing has been tampered, and that the agencies, for example, themselves can create accounts and even mine the data and do automated kind of auditing. So we can power those kinds of use cases. And finally, growers, the system itself, because now you know the end-to-end, you can have the end-to-end visibility. It's a way for growers for themselves to kind of advertise themselves, or because the consumer can get to know a grower, right? If grower wishes to, if he permissions himself. So this can power use cases, right? So, and I'll talk more about them a little bit later. So basically the gist of this slide is that the whole ecosystem, all the partners benefit in some or the other way by sharing this data across the data platform. And everybody has their own value. And that's where IBM Food Trust really kind of shines. So going a bit deeper onto how we are built, we are built on the Hyperledger fabric. And on top of that, we have some extensions to create a blockchain platform. And then really our solution, the IBM Food Trust solution, sits on top of it. Right? And yes, we we created initially a set of modules, right? As an example modules, right? So for example, we have a trace module where you can actually, and I'll demo some of this, where you can actually use a product and lot number and search and see the supply chain and so on, right? Similarly, you have certificate module where suppliers can upload certificates, retailers and other auditors can see the certificates. There's automated logic to detect expiring certificates and so on. So there's a lot of that kind of logic. Similarly, we have fresh insights module where as goods are flowing to supply chain, particularly the fresh products who have limited shelf time, we can track the freshness, we can track the dwell time, it can power optimizations, we can do inventory optimizations, those kinds of things. So host of analytics is possible by end-to-end data. And we have APIs ready, right? So a new consumer or a new analytics firm or a new supplier or retailer can come in, build their own app so they can plug into the ecosystem. And as long as they are able, willing to share their data or some others or other parties are willing to share data with this particular partner, they get access to the data they're entitled to, and they can build third party or they can build their own applications. So it's more like an API platform that we are building with some examples of modules and use cases that we, on talking to big retailers and suppliers, found that these are the important ones. So we built them initially. Any questions so far? All right. So let me go to the demo. And I just have to share my screen again. Are you able to see the screen?
Yes, we can see it.
Okay, great. So, first of all, in order to, this is the home page of IBM Food Trust, right? To get here, an organization has to be onboarded, and we have an onboarding process. It's a very simple process. You basically create IDs, and you create like an IBM ID, and so authentication and all that in place. So once you log in, you have this kind of page where you can see the number of total organizations you are connected to, similarly your organization's product and facility. Some of this is dummy data. We have, so what I'm going to show today is more of sample data. We do have lots of, and I'll talk about some statistics, more than 100 companies on Utrust and very actively sending data. So, but I'll talk about that a bit later. So now you can click on, these are some of the modules I was talking about, right? Trace, certificates, and so on. So you can go into one of the modules, let's say. For example, I'm going to demo a trace module today, right? So you can trace based on a product identification number, which is typically a 14-digit GTIN number. And I'll talk about GS1 standards shortly. We have completely embraced GS1 standards, and because they have done extensive work over the years in terms of representing information for traceability and other use cases. You can search through a GTIN, which is typically owned by suppliers, and in some cases, big retailers like Walmart have private brand GTINs. You can search through a label, you can search through purchase order, and so on. So in this case, let me just say, let me choose a product, right? So for example, this is the product I'm choosing. So it's a baby food product produced by this fresh produce, right? So all I say is use this product. And by the way, so this is a front end, right? This is a front end that's running that's powered by blockchain behind, right? And I'll talk about it in a second. So all we can do is trace. Now, you must have seen a lot number there. One can also narrow it down, putting in a specific lot number information, a pallet information, or purchase order and date information, and so on. So you can really narrow the trace down. In this case, for the sample data, we just have a couple of lots because data from a real retailer. This is more for demo purposes. So I just clicked on trace. And when you start tracing, essentially you will see, first thing that you will see is end-to-end supply chain. Right? So for example, farm on the left, processing plant, manufacturing plant, warehouse, distribution, store. Right? And in this case, what I search for is a baby food. This baby food is made up of four components: apples, potatoes, carrots, and squash. So you can expand. First of all, it'll show you what is the category of that particular entity. So in this case, farms. You can click and actually expand and start seeing details about where these apples are coming from. So in this case, they're coming from this farm, which is located in this particular place, and it commissioned apples. So many cases were commissioned, and this is the lot number. And those apples were packed, and they were into this pallet, right? And they were sent to this particular facility. So you can see the details about the lot number, the packing, the date, the location, and all that. And all these are GS1 attributes. Okay. Similarly, you have potatoes, carrots, and squash, and so on. And from then, you can go to the next step, saying, okay, what happens to these apples that was received? So at facility 2002, so those apples were received, they were unpacked, and then there was a transformation done. So those apples were input, and the output was peeled and chunked apples. So the real raw apples were processed to create this new output lot number in so many cases. And this happened at this location, right? And similarly, then some other event may have happened there. I think this is the same event. So those events, those peel and chunk apples were packed, and then they went on to the next entity in the supply chain, where we can see what may have happened. So apple puree got created. So again, a transformation of peel and chunked apples to apple puree was done. And similarly, other purees were also which were also created at this manufacturing plant, were combined to finally create the product we searched for, which is good for babies, backyard veggies, right? And this is the output lot number. So that's what happened in the manufacturing plant. And later, that would have got shipped, right? So there would be a packing event at this facility, destined to this particular facility in this pallet and so on. And you can it was received at the warehouse, right? So you can see some information there, when it was received and what was done. And what warehouse does is, now this is where a supplier will start fulfilling purchase orders for the retailer. So so particularly this particular product that we just created, this particular lot number, for example, was sent into this pallet, and it was for this particular purchase order number, right? And I'll talk about some of the data elements in a second. And then the distributor who actually gave the purchase order then received it. And the distributor's goal will be to send it to all the stores for the consumers. So he unpacked everything, and then they were sent to the store. So if you click on the store, you will finally find an event where the particular lot number, which was received for this purchase order, so many cases were at this store. So this view essentially is an end-to-end supply chain view that goes from commissioning of a lot of a raw product or harvesting of apples all the way to the final product and where it is in the store. So in some sense, farm to store. So a consumer who would, for example, go and pick up this particular, let's say, cup, baby food cup in the store, can scan and basically see this end-to-end view, right? Now there's also, so this is a supply chain view, and on the top you have the timeline, right? From the, you know, when the first apple or first sweet potato was harvested to all the way or the last event in the store, right? There's also an ingredient view, which actually shows, so this is more like a product view where apples were created, they were converted to peel and chunk apples, from there to apple puree, and finally to backyard veggies, right? So this is more an ingredient or a process map, if you would call that, as opposed to a supply chain view, which was the earlier. So this is the kind of information we can immediately get in seconds, right? And this thing, Walmart conducted a study, by the way. It took them 7 days to actually, take a mango product and trace it all the way to the farm, right? And using phone calls and, you know, emails and all those processes. But if you have a system like blockchain, where end-to-end people can upload data, then it'll be much faster. Now,
let me pause it. Could you show us what the search looks like if you look at something more broad, like pork or apples or something? If you looked at something that wasn't baby food, where you might have many entries or many, many sources of origin?
Yeah, you could search on. Let me see if there are some more example products, right?
I'm just wondering if it shows you how the products are different, or how they come from different places, et cetera, or what it would show you.
The view, the trace view, is very similar, right? Because if you really look at the how this view is captured, essentially each of them is a GS1 EPCIS event, right? So the attributes are fairly standard. I mean, GS1 has done a wonderful job in terms of really documenting. And I personally work very closely with GS1 to really not only understand, but we identified some small gaps, give them feedback. But essentially each of this, for example, I think, let me try to get another product here. I think we had, so some of these are our products, but I don't know if, let's see if this works out. Right, so this is a very simple ingredient, right? So you have a baby spinach for a farm, and it just went to point of sale. So we can model various things based on events. I don't know if this answers your question. This is a very, very simple supply chain view, right? So it's not that, it's not that anything like the process is hard-coded into the system. Absolutely no. The engine is completely independent of the process, the ingredients, and you know, the events and whatnot. The core engine, really, that's storing that, of course we're storing data on the blockchain, but what the core engine does is it really connects all these events together based on information such as lot numbers, purchase orders, and so on, and it comes up with that end-to-end trace, right? That's what it does. And we capture, and we have for example, when we work with retailers and suppliers, usually the process, what they have done is all these companies, while they send things like purchase orders and events real time, right? For example, a big retailer will send a purchase order to supplier using an EDI kind of message. They actually shadow in real time and send it to IBM blockchain. So we are fully running in production, getting real time data from all these suppliers and retailers and farmers and growers, and then we are able to construct this end-to-end view because we have they are sending it in GS1 standard formats to us. Because the format is standardized, we're able to put together the end-to-end chain view using lot numbers, purchase orders, and so on, using the same information, and construct this and show it, right? Now let me also take a couple of minutes. So we have I won't spend a lot of time on this, but we have certificates. So you can also upload PDF documents and so on. You can associate them with facilities. You can associate them with individual shipments. For example, something like a hot water certificate from mangoes would be associated with that lot number. Whereas an audit certificate, annual certificate for a facility would be associated with the facility. So you can look into details about certificates and when something's expiring, what is a certificate. I think it's just a sample, so we don't have here, but there are some other examples here. So, and then there are some other modules. I won't get into every detail, but you can have different users. You can have, you can restrict the access. So once an organization onboards, there is one or two admins that you can add, and the admins will add other users. Some people have only the read capability, some have write capability. There are system users we create. The system users are something that can be integrated to call the APIs for ingestion, right? So that they are, for example, into the current existing supplier and retailer systems. System users are the ones that are used for authentication, and then you get tokens, and then you renew tokens, and then you send it to APIs and for data ingestion, right? So that's kind of the overview. Let me pause there, because I know there could be other questions, different kinds of questions. Let me pause there and take questions. And in the meantime, I would like to show one more slide. Yeah, please go ahead. Sorry, there's a lot of noise.
Any questions from the group?
Yeah, so I have a question. This is John, John Vida. Interesting, looking at your sort of provenance and transformation effects, turning sort of apples into puree, into agglomerated baby food, how susceptible or vulnerable is this system to missed steps? Because my experience, so I've worked much more in sort of digital domain, sort of chips and microcontroller kind of end of supply chain, but it's very common for one or two folks, for you know, one or two times of the year, to just stop doing their reporting or fall out of spec or whatever. So if you lose a record, how, what happens to that functionality? Someone forgets to say what the point that they turn into puree, for example.
Okay. So let me make sure I understand the question. I think the, because of some difference, the question was, what if you suddenly miss one data point in between through the supply chain, right?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, so see, the thing is, if the data point is more like an, hey, I observed this lot number in this warehouse, if let's say suddenly that's missed, it's okay. I mean, the warehouse will not show up when you trace that for that particular lot number, right? Whereas if the data point is more like, hey, I missed converting puree into final product, then essentially when you query the final product, because you missed a major transformation, what will happen is you will see two different traces that are not linkable because you missed a transformation. Because you have lot A for puree, that's being converted to batch number B of the final baby product, right? So if you query using batch number B, you will see the final product to the retailer, to the store, but the information that batch B derived from lot A is not in the system. So when you query for lot A, you will see the farmer, the vendor, the supplier, but for them, both of them to be tied together, you need that transformation. So you'll essentially see two distinct traces.
Right.
So yes, while others think about questions, let me also share that. So we are in production for obviously more than a year now, and I have listed some companies we are heavily working with here. We have a very extensive network in Europe and US. So far, about 12 million transactions. And typically when I say transaction, this is most likely an EPCIS event, such as, a commission or a transformation kind of event that are already on the system. And in some cases, we have some sensor data as well, temperature and so on. So for example, we also have mechanisms where you associate payloads of information to the EPCIS event saying, hey, this particular, chicken as it was going through this was observed at this temperature. So you can associate the temperature with lot number and with specific events. So there are some of those, but a lot of these transactions are actually EPCIS events. Then we have different, so many traces conducted and so on. Let me also share that the user interface is built on top of APIs underneath, right? So one can actually come in. So for example, we did pilots with, I listed at Cat4, and not just pilots, these are actually going on to production as well, right? Some of all these companies, some of them, they actually build their own applications, their own mobile applications and anything else, their own internal applications that on top of the APIs that we provide. So just like the way Trace was, I showed Trace. So you can think of the Trace and certificates as two examples of such applications, right? So that's the kind of scale we are at right now, growing very fast, but I just wanted to point that out.
I have a question.
Okay, I know I took 35 minutes. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marco. So right now, the primary way to interface with IBM Food Trust is via API. And is that a true statement before I continue?
There are two, I would say there's two primary ways to interface with IBM Food Trust. In terms of, you can obviously, the user interface that I showed is fully available as soon as one onboards. You know, you can do that. But in terms of data, in automated data ingestion and automated data extraction, it's APIs.
Okay, so in terms of blockchain, though, can you host your own node?
Absolutely. So we have some big heavyweight companies who have started the process. But you know, hosting a node has it's not a short process, right? There is two, three things. There are many things involved in terms of your own infrastructure, maintenance, and then you know, connecting, and then governance and data privacy and everything. So absolutely. So IBM Food Trust has a advisory council. I think there are 15 members are part of it. So that's what governs the whole IBM Food Trust, right? In terms of decisions, data governance, and so on. For example, policies such as if you put data, you own your data, and you permission it to whom you want to see. So all those decisions are made by the governing body. And if you host, if you are most welcome to host your node, some big players are doing it. And as long as, you know, they comply with that governance, right? So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, sure. Jonathan speaking. I have a question concerning your governance and consortium management. How do you guys, for example, if I'm a big company like Carrefour, Walmart, if I want to use your platform, how is the governance is going to be set in place? Are you going to create like a whole new system, or you know, are you going to create like a specific channel, or are you managing this whole process?
Let me make sure. Okay, I'll answer it, but let me know if because I was hearing some noise also. So first of all, there is an IBM Food Trust ecosystem, right? And these companies, we have an advisory council, what we call, and the governance is, you know, all determined by that. If a big company comes and wants to have, let's say, their own private network with their own suppliers, their own farmers, their own governance policy, we can definitely support that from a technological perspective. They can go, they can have their own, let's say, you know, I'm just cooking up something, right? Let's say some big supplier in China or Malaysia, they want to have their own network with a different governance policy. We can support that also.
But so right now, if a company is joining, are you like creating a whole complete channel, own channel, or how do you handling the data privacy?
Okay, so there are different modes of data privacy and permissioning. Now, suppose you onboard, right? Once you onboard, you start submitting your events, you can say that all events, first of all, are private. You can say that if you want to. You can say, I want my events to be visible only to the transactional partners, right? So let's say you as a supplier are sending to a retailer, you're sending a shipment. You can say, I want that shipment data to be that particular record that the shipment has gone to be visible only to that retailer. So that's a mode of permissioning. Or you can say, so we have different, or you can say open and public. So we have different modes of permissioning that you can control, and so we have all the options provided, right? So you can choose what you want to.
Yeah, okay, I got it. But from a network technical standpoint of view, how are you underlining it? How do I have like certainty that my data are private, that they are segregated? Are you creating like my own channel, or is it like any kind of standard API?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we, first of all, yes, you can create your own channel with other partners and work through, absolutely. And even in that process, we have all the data permissioning and entitlement logic in place to ensure that what you share is only with those that you share, right? So both possibilities are there. You can combine them as well.
Okay, thank you very much for your answer.
Sure.
Hi, this is Baiju. I just want to have one question. You mentioned that anybody could join the network. For example, if I am hosted on Oracle or AWS, I could still bring up the nodes and join the network, probably through a handshake, which you could enable. What about the processes which are already there, right? The smart contracts, the services. So is it that I would just get a node where I can read, or is it that I could get the smart contracts as well, which is already developed?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? So we are going in the direction of, so today we have some smart contracts, and you know, our the some of the heavyweights that are using our system are working in the process of, you know, provisioning their nodes and so on, right? But as we move forward, yes, you will have ability to deploy your smart contracts, right? And you can, as you know, you can permission who executes what smart contracts, and we will provide guidance on how to run and execute them, right? So you can specify where all you want it to run and so on. But we are going in the direction. Today, I don't have a real use case of what you said, but that will be there soon.
Is it because now all the parties are still hosted in IBM cloud? Is it because of that? You don't have an example?
No, it's not. Today, yes, all the nodes are on the IBM cloud, and processes are in place. And of course, people are going to have their own nodes soon. So yes, but however, smart contracts, you can still have your own node on IBM contract and execute smart contracts, right? You can govern a node, you can own a node, yeah.
So it will be open, like an open source where I could have that smart contract and deploy it, install and instantiate it in my node, or is it like that now, or it is a future?
No, I mean, of course you will write your own smart contract, right? So smart contract, when you say open, IBM, what do you mean by open? We are very open network in the sense anybody can join, you can deploy your, yeah.
No, primarily from a traceability perspective, if I want to work with Walmart and Nestle, and I am a company, works with them. Obviously, if you want to have the consensus, you should have the same smart contract running in with the same version running in all the nodes, which means the same smart contract and the version should be running in my node too, right? Otherwise, there is no consensus.
Correct.
But if I write my own smart contract, then I can only connect with parties whom I am dealing with, not with the...
Correct. What you agree on when you deploy a smart contract, let's say with Walmart and some of the other companies, suppose you are coming to first of all, at a business level, you will come to an agreement saying, this is the kind of smart contract we are deploying. This is the kind of data it will take in. This is the kind of processing you'll do and output. Once that agreement is reached, definitely you can deploy that smart. So there are two aspects there. One is technical deployment. At the same time, obviously, when these companies talk to each other and they agree on smart contracts, there's a business level decision as well. So once the business level decision is made, then you can get permission and appropriately deploy technical level, you can execute it, right? So I think I'm just clarifying that whatever you said, I 100% agree, but there are two aspects there. And then I think both are part of the answer, right?
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
And Joe, Josh, I took a lot of time. I didn't want to get...
No, I actually have two questions, if it's okay. I'm not trying to rush you.
Sure.
So following on to what was just asked, first of all, how are you going to work with, or how are you working with clients like Albertsons or Walmart that are on other networks? Is everything that they do have to be on Hyperledger Fabric? If they're working on Ethereum or Corda or a different network, will you be allowed to integrate based on the nodes that they're managing? Are you looking to integrate through those nodes or APIs? Or is there a requirement that everybody's working on the same blockchain network and protocol?
So today, in general, your question ties to interoperability, in my opinion.
Yes.
And one of the most important things, in my opinion, for interoperability is having same data formats, right? I mean, that makes it easier. One of the reasons we embraced GS1 from the beginning is so that in future, if there are, let there be other networks, right? Let them have, as long as, if they stick to the standards that we are sticking to and speak the same language, interoperability will be all the more easier, right? So today, I think in networks may evolve, right? Today, our platform runs on Fabric, right? And we have a set of data standards that we follow. So we are happy, and it's not that everybody has to run the same thing, but you could run on other networks. You could, as long as you speak the same language, I think interoperability will be easier. That's what I can
say. And I guess in terms of those exact standards, are there any standards that you at IBM have observed are currently a gap in the market that the GS1 needs to work on, or that this Hyperledger Fabric community should be focused on so that we can have better standardization?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yes, the answer is absolutely yes. So I think this is a great avenue to even discuss those, right? Because as a SSA group, I guess we would be influencing what are some of the things that may be required from the Fabric. From GS1 perspective, absolutely. And even some of the things that I showed, such as certification, or we have identified the way they have, I'll give you some concrete examples. The way the purchase order numbers are, in order to make them globally unique, changes had to be made. There was no proper standard for master data. For example, the way facilities and items were represented, the GS1, they have just GDSN framework, which is to share data. But if you look at the actual traceability specification and so on, there are statements that say master data is, you know, you can represent it the way you want. There's some flexibility GS1 gave. So we made use of that. At the same time, I personally was working with GS1, and actually they, you know, the whole certification standard is now coming into place, and they're also, I think, looking at JSON LD and all that, but there are some more gaps that we need to be filled, things like master data, some other things also. We have a short list, actually, at some point I can, you know, share.
Very cool. My very last question was, when you are working with folks like Albertsons and Walmart and Nestle, are you working with them to launch the nodes for them, or are they proactively launching nodes on their own premise, connecting with your network, et cetera? Or is it more that you're helping them to be, are you inviting them on and helping them to manage and launch that node?
We are happy to help and manage them. We will provide them whatever is needed for them to, you know, launch the nodes and, you know, be part of the network. And I'll tell you, if there is some company that wants to launch few nodes, right, and form their, for some reason, let's say their own private ecosystem using solution like IBM Food Trust, we'll help them to more like because they have their own governance model and so on. We'll help that also. But yes, so there is pull also from their side in terms of them being interested in big launching their node and having some data on them. At the same time, we are also supporting them to do the same.
Got it. Because I've heard very different from different companies around their appetite for launching nodes and supporting the related cost of managing that, or hosting that node on cloud versus on-prem, and how much data they would ultimately be managing over time, and just how companies were thinking about that. But that's very helpful. Thank you.
No
problem. Do we have time for more questions? I just have enough questions.
If there's any more feedback, yeah, because all that we have from here is any new member introductions and any open discussion or updates. I can take that, but I think it's more important that folks ask questions here, because that's really the point of this call.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, go ahead.
My question was, like, how do you handle certificate security along your supply chain? Do you host it in the company, in the supply chain, or do you link it through an API that is hosted on IBM, or how do you handle that?
So how do you, you're talking about the certificates such as audit certificates or facility certificates? Is that what you're asking? How does it upload it?
identity.
Identity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, we are an organization, identity-wise, I mean, it's connected to, it has blockchain credentials, right? I mean, there is a user level authentication we do for IBM Food Trust and everything, but underlyingly there's Hyperledger credentials also we use actually to, you know, while onboarding and everything, right? So let me just say, when you talk about, and correct me if I'm understood the question wrongly. So if you talk about certificates, if you're talking about, you know, things like authentication and token, is that where your question is, or I'm still unclear on whether it is because a supplier uploading a certificate, but the certificate was actually issued by a third party, and is the supplier the one uploading the certificate, or the third party uploading the certificate saying that, hey, I have this supplier, this certificate is for the supplier. Is that the question?
Yeah, my question is concerning, like, basically, oh, I make sure that the supplier is who we said he is. And basically, that's going to be the identity that goes along with the transaction.
Yeah, if the supplier uploads something, it's the supplier's identity that goes with the transaction.
So, but do you store it in your backend, like in your IBM backend, or do you store it in a vault in the supplier?
So as part of onboarding, suppliers get their credentials and authentication based on, so they upload the certificates, and we store everything at the back end. I don't know if that answers, but we can get, maybe if you want to ping me, we can get later into, you know, exact technical details if you're interested in there. Yeah.
Sure. Thank you very much.
One question related to that, you need only the root certificate, right? Why do you need all the certificates?
Yeah, I can pull in the person who worked on that particular part if needed.
Because it's an organization.
So what we do, yeah.
So the organization controls its users, and it's a decentralized network. So from a network perspective, only the root certificate matters.
But yes.
Thanks.
All right. If no other questions, then it goes. Thank you so much.
Hello. Yeah, Alok this side, and I have a question.
Sure. Please go for it.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I just want to know how scalable is the system in terms of nodes and organizations, and how does it impact the performance?
So we have, as I said, so we have millions of records right now on the system, and we have ways to, you know, some of the things that were discussed on this call, you can create channels, you can create, you can separate out where data needs to reside and so on. So there are many ways to scale the system. So far, we have not hit a scalability bottleneck. But if we hit it as we grow beyond, then we will come up with more and more mechanisms. But we will rely, we will make use of all the scalability features that Fabric offers and so on.
Okay, so which consensus algorithm we use? Just because scalability depends on that, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, we use the one. Use the standard one, right? Endorsers, ordering, right? Whatever the Fabric is providing.
Okay, so we are not using PBF, Raft, and other.
We are not using PBFT.
No.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Any other questions from the group? Excellent. Local, I know I speak for the group when we say we hope you continue to stay involved here, and you hope you let us know where and when this group can get involved in helping to make this even more successful, whether it's helping to raise more standards or whether it's talking about the different consensus methodologies, et cetera. And as you have clients on Food Trust that are interested, we would love to have them here as well. We're looking to build this out. But thank you so much for your time here today.
Sure, Joss. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for all the questions.
Thank you.
Folks, we're almost at time now. Are there any new members on the line that would like to introduce themselves that have joined this week for the first time?
Yep, I will do that. This is John Gita, CTO of Jitsu and formerly of the governing board. I actually work on sort of cybersecurity traceability for Internet of Things devices in sort of sensitive environments, but there's a lot of overlap between IoT and device management and supply chain concepts. So I'm hoping to drive things in the right way. I work on both Sawtooth and Ursa security library quite actively. So hoping to sort of just get a bit more of a real world feel from this group.
Excellent. Very, very welcome addition. Welcome to the group. Thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah. Hi, this is Heather Vessant. I am an independent researcher. I just completed a DHS cybersecurity contract doing a deep dive into tracking and auditing digital identity on the supply chain. I'm looking to continue doing that research. That report will be publicly available probably early fall. And I think that a lot of people find it interesting. So I wanted to connect with this community and, see if I missed anything, and then also share the research and see where you can go improving supply chain.
Very, very cool. Welcome to the group. It sounds great. If you have anything from your existing research that you would like to share with the group in future calls, or anything that you'd like to present or survey us on, just let us know.
Sounds great. I've got two other reports. Sorry, there's a lot of noise, so I didn't mean to cut you off if I did.
No, please just, go ahead.
This was the third set of research I did in my contract with them. I don't know if you guys would be interested in the first two topic areas. The first one I looked into was market gaps in NPE identity, which is non-person entity identity, which identifies both. It includes both legal corporate identity and IoT identity, which is important when you are looking at like sensors or companies, especially in relation to smart contracts. This would be like the relationship with the smart contracts on the supply chain. It also has a broader impact over other things. So I'd be happy to do something in that and have like a share my research and have a conversation about that. The second report, these are both publicly out. So I'm still kind of orienting myself to the group and figuring out like the lists and where to post this kind of stuff. So those are both public and I can send them links if you guys want to look at them. The second one has to do with the security of voter data systems. And so this is basically like, in both of these cases, the data isn't PII, so it can be more easily explored about putting on the blockchain or, there's aren't as many security concerns with other applications of other digital identity applications on the blockchain. So anyway, I don't know if that is as relevant to what you guys are doing.
No. Listen, that makes a lot of sense. I think actually it is relevant. We've had a lot of supply chain based conversations with different companies around having the right security around IoT devices and the right identity. I think the NPE point is very interesting. What I would suggest, I just sent you my email through the chat that we have. Why don't you send both papers to the group And if and based upon folks' reaction, we can definitely schedule to have you present on the papers further. And we'd love to have you continue part of the group either way. But I would suggest that maybe you send the links to those papers to the group and we can go from there.
Sounds great, Joshua. I got your email and I'll follow up with you and figure out what's the right appropriate way to engage with the community here. Thank you.
100%. I think everything you're talking about, it may not resonate with everybody, but there's definitely aspects around PII, IoT management, et cetera, that play directly into supply chain logistics. So it would be very interesting and happy to talk to you more offline.
Yeah, and I'm also looking for other opportunities to extend the research in both of those areas, whether it's with like a company or a collaboration. But I'm a futurist and researcher, so I like to have my nose to the grindstone, and I'm kind of just like coming up for air after the last 12 months. And so I don't just like to throw the research out in a black box. I want to make sure that it's accessible and usable to push forward the initiatives of the community. And I know Brian Belladorf and Salona, but I haven't really engaged with you guys in Hyperledger before. So this is kind of my first involvement with you. And so I'm excited to learn about the functionality that you guys are using for Fabric regarding supply chain, whether it's food tracking or provenance or et cetera. You know, there's a lot of opportunities in the space.
Oh yeah, immense. So let's talk offline about the white papers, and then I'll also connect you with Jay, who's the chair, and you can talk more broadly around how you can potentially get involved with the group around the research angle and Sawtooth and Fabric and everything like you're talking about. But I think that works just great. Are there any other new members on the line that want to introduce themselves? Really appreciate John and Heather. Anybody else? Okay. And then before we have folks drop off, are there any new points that folks would like noted in the minutes this week, things they would like discussed next week going forward? Any new issues or anything, or any new project updates that they would like to share? And yeah, and Jay will be back for the next call, but I will share everything with him and share the minutes afterwards. So any project updates or any open discussion items or suggestions for future calls?
Comment I have, Josh.
Yeah, please. I'm waiting. Like two folks? Go for it.
Yeah, this is Gokul again. But I'll let the other person speak first. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I had a question. I was wondering if there is any like governance and consortium project that were ongoing, because I see a lot of a big lack of this kind of tools for, you know, startup to entering the space, and I think it's a big lack for company to have it, because right now I only see IBM and maybe Oracle having that kind of tools, and I would like to know if there is like any ongoing project to solve that kind of issue.
Jonathan, I think there is a Cello project which is very similar.
Yeah, but honestly, I kind of work with Cello, and I think it was not really, you know, like production ready. But I'm not sure it's solving the governance issues and consortium management issues. Like, for example, how do you scale a network from 5 to 50 companies? How do you handle it?
Cello is supposed to handle that with multiple clouds.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, okay. Is that something for the supply chain group, or is that more for Gokul? I just want to be clear. Is it a...
I think it's applied to every kind of business where many companies involved.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I don't know if you heard, they just published yesterday Hyperledger Justicia, which is supposedly just to help maintain and create consortiums on Hyperledger Fabric. But what you're talking about doesn't sound like it's specific to food trust or supply chain. It sounds like it's more of a general issue around all of the hyperledger groups and how this would be organized.
Can you repeat the name, please?
Sure. I'm sorry. What's your name? I'll message it to you really quickly right now. It's okay.
My name is Jonathan. Thank you very much.
Jonathan Chevalier, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
You got it. I'm sending it to you right now. So they just, I just got it because I'm part of all the different updates, but for folks who are specifically worried about consortiums, they just published a proposal yesterday for something called Hyperledger Justitia, J-U-S-T-I-T-I-A. I'll message it to the group right now. And it's supposed to be a protocol specifically just for creating and managing consortiums on Hyperledger Fabric as you look to build out. So I haven't read through the whole thing yet, but it was just published yesterday, and it might help what you're talking about. I don't think it's going to help with the food trust, and I think if you want to talk about it specific to supply chain, we can in a future call, and if it's related to a specific use case. But I can feel your pain and from the startup space and what you're talking about.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem at all. It's also something you might want to bring up with Marta, who's the person at Hyperledger that really manages all of our groups and works at the Linux Foundation. But I just sent it to you guys, and I'll send it to the group also. That's just been sent. Hyperledger Justitia. If you just Google that, or if you just look it up real quick, you'll find it on the Hyperledger Confluence page, and you'll see the full proposal. Were there any other, Gokul, did you have something also that you wanted to raise?
Yes, Joshua, thanks for the opportunity again. So, yeah. I mean, we are focused on supply chain, right? So just wanted to say that there are a couple of supply chain solutions, like for example, the Trade Lens, right? Which is also a supply chain solution, but much more focusing on the actual carriers, freight forwarders, the whole shipping kind of industry, right, which we're also operating. And so if it's of interest to this group, I could invite one of the TradeLens folks to give a presentation in future. And the other is Trust Your Supplier, which is more of an identity solution for suppliers. So those two are other IBM solutions that are very active out there. So I just wanted to bring it up if it's of interest.
And they're both built on Hyperledger Fabric. Right.
Yes.
So they're both built on Fabric, and I believe TradeLens is also where you have Maersk as your key partner.
Correct.
So we would love to. Case in point, Food Trust is great. I think TradeLens even hits more with the overall objective and support of this group, because this group is originally logistics and supply chain. I think TradeLens fits very, very well
okay. In
understanding international shipping and logistics. It plays directly into the supply chain, obviously. So we would most definitely welcome that in the future. Trust Your Supplier is a little bit different, but we'd be very happy to get that as well. But I think TradeLens would be a top priority for this group. I think we're going to have an upcoming presentation from BETA, blockchain and transportation also. I think those two together paint a really compelling picture around logistics.
Okay, great. Well, that's great, Josh. So I'll stay in touch whenever you think is a good time. If I know a little advance, I'll invite either the architect or the one of the offering managers on TradeLens.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I mean, looking ahead, if you wanted to think about 2 or 4 weeks from now, let us know.
Sure, definitely. I'll keep you posted.
At the same time. Thank you. Excellent. Anything else from anybody? I've got all these items listed in our notes. Any other points that anybody wants to capture before we drop?
I would just like to address the VR that I'm bringing to the group. So it's been cited by Northrop. Our patent has been cited by Northrop and by the Sony Corporation. Okay. And what we will be able to do with the VR is plug it in with the SSL sockets, it's redundant, and the MQTT with the Internet of Things with AWS. And so what Jay and I have discussed is publishing a paper on a thread And I'm in the works of doing that right now. But I do want to say that what we're able to accomplish is to prioritize information such as the GPS or the RFID or other sensors. So we're able to actually prioritize information and then literally use hologram technologies to basically build the dashboard. So I think that's where I just want to end off as far as right now. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. Have you been able, can you send anything out to the group more broadly around the functionality high level that's public, not public domain, that's not sensitive information, or?
That's what Jay and I are in conversation about. And so I am in the works of doing that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's essentially,
awesome.
It's essentially
no problem then if you guys are talking about it.
Yeah. It's essentially the self-driving car, you know, the model in the loop. And then the model in the loop is, you know, I'm not reinventing anything really, just bringing it to Kubernetes.
Gotcha. Okay. No problem at all. Then whenever you and Jay fix it, we'll figure it out. We'll be happy to have you on.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, it's essentially ANSYS simulation modules that we'll be using to develop.
Okay, and then it's for a VR-based supply chain management module that you would create a virtual dashboard?
A virtual dashboard, but we would also be able to push data from the sensors.
Okay. Got it. Okay, I've put it down, Brett. I appreciate it.
Okay, good.
Okay, good. Anybody else? Anything? Well, all right. Guys, really good call this week. Appreciate everybody's time today. Whoever's still on, I will send out minutes. We will have another call in 2 weeks. We'll look to get TradeLens on. And anything else, please feel free to contact Jay and I. Thank you and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.